to you from Gunai Kurnai Lands, we wish to pay our respect to Elders past, present, future and emerging. This is the Theories of Hope podcast. Please be advised that some subject matters may be upsetting for some listeners and discretion is advised. Nor is this podcast a substitute for professional advice and is intended as general information only. Welcome to the show, Kathy Farrell. Thank you so much for coming on. I do really appreciate it. Kathy, tell us, I'll let you tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words.
Okay, well, I'm 55, which still surprises me. I'm 55, I still feel about 30. And I've got a lovely husband and two children. Obviously, they're adults now, a girl and a boy, mm-hmm. which I get along famously with. But, yeah, I was an academic at Swinburne for 20 years and I lectured in media and communications. And then COVID hit and everyone decided to pivot.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, good time for me to pivot. And I'd always wanted to be, you know, to study social work or psychology or something like that. I did do a major in sociology, so I was already kind of in that area. I did mm-hmm. study my honours year that was so it was really sociology, not media. So I decided I would like to do social work. So mm-hmm. I quit my job, which was a huge decision, mm-hmm. and then I enrolled in a Master of Social Work at Melbourne, and I'm in the sort of in the throes of finishing that, thank goodness. And I've been on placement, and that's been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Social work is very different to being an academic,
mm-hmm.
I've discovered. But I think it'll be really rewarding. So, yeah, I've got a dog too. He's only got 3 legs.
Yeah.
That's his unique selling point. Sitting down here beside me.
Lovely. Awesome. I love it. And can you tell us a little bit about the health conditions and diagnosis that you live with as much as you're
okay.
comfortable?
Yep. That's fine. I'm an open book. All right, so when I was 30, I went overseas, and when I came back, the overseas bit is important. I'm not giving you sort of additional, you know, unnecessary information here. When I got back, I found I couldn't walk upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got back, and when I got to the airport, I went to go upstairs, and I couldn't make my legs go upstairs. So mm-hmm. I had to put one foot on a step, and then the next foot followed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do the same for the next step. And I was thinking, oh, my God, I've got so unfit that I can't even get up bloody stairs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back, it was my first overseas trip. I was on my own. Mm-hmm. I was doing research and I went to 4 countries. And because I hadn't traveled before, everything was a bit scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was going to countries where English wasn't the main language, and just everything about it stressed me out. And I can't help but think that the stress of that kind of didn't kind of give me sciatic arthritis, but it kind of the stress that I felt, I think it certainly was the moment that it brought out, because I'd had mm-hmm. a bit of psoriasis and I used to get tired a lot as well. So anyway, I went to it got worse and worse till in the end I couldn't get out of a chair. I couldn't well, obviously, I've already said I couldn't walk upstairs. I couldn't, you know, I was just really disabled. And mm-hmm. I had a walking stick, but my arms were so weak that mm-hmm. I was having trouble, you know, putting weight on the walking stick so I could walk. And things became really grim. And I went to specialist after specialist,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were saying you might have MS, you might have motor neurons, which wasn't very cheerful. You might have fibromyalgia. There were all these different things. The only thing that they didn't suggest I might have was psoriatic arthritis. And upon reflection, I would say the fact that I had psoriasis on quite a few parts of my body, I would have thought maybe that might be the first inquiry. But I went to see a specialist, and he ran a whole heap of tests, a rheumatologist.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back and he goes, it's psoriatic arthritis, which I hadn't heard of before. I didn't know such a thing existed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I slowly got worse and worse and worse, but then the medication started working 3 or 4 months after I started taking it. That was methotrexate, which seems to be the go-to for this particular condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, like, really improved. I improved to the point where I was quite mobile, and I thought, oh, this is good. But then like most people with psoriatic arthritis, eventually the medication stops working as effectively. So I went back to not being able to walk. And this, look, this has happened multiple times, and I've just been put on different medication each time that's, you know, that's worked for a while. But yeah, I'm always, always, always sore somewhere, and I'm always stiff somewhere, and I'm always swollen somewhere. So it's a really difficult disease to live with, and people don't know, like a lot of people have never heard of it.
No.
So anyway, so this was all happening when my children were very young. So, and I was trying to, you know, establish a career. So this was like really bad timing if you're going to get a chronic illness. And then, and so I sort of struggled along and became quite depressed about the whole situation because I was still young and, you know, I'm hobbling around like an old person. Anyway, I got really depressed and I was sent to a psychologist who sent me to a psychiatrist, and I found out I had bipolar and ADHD. There's a bit of an ADHD push at the moment because a lot of women have missed out when they're younger because, of course, it's an attention thing, not a I'm going to go and, like, kick a hole in the wall type thing, which sometimes, you know, little boys can do or slap someone next to me or something. So here I was with psoriatic arthritis, bipolar, ADHD, which explained quite a bit about my life, I have to say, with a relief. The ADHD was a relief, the bipolar, not so much. So anyway, I've just gone through stages where I've been a little too happy, and then I've been through stages where it's got so grim that I've had to be hospitalised. I think some of that mental stuff is tied up with the physical stuff because, you know, when you're walking around in chronic pain, all day, every day, and like just to give you a bit of an example, I'm in my caravan, I'm having a break, but I've got a bit of psoriasis. I've got a patch of psoriasis on my elbow at the moment that I've just been there for about 2 years. Can't get rid of it. I'm so stiff I can't turn over naturally in bed. So I use my elbow to sort of prop me up as I'm turning. But because I've got this patch, it hurts. So all night long, every time I want to turn, I'm too stiff to turn. My hands are bad at the moment. I put my elbow down, you know, like half asleep, not even thinking about it. And then I wake myself up. I think, and then it takes me a little while to get back to sleep. And anyone with psoriatic arthritis will tell you sleep is so important. So, but I don't know. It's almost like I've been feeling a bit down about it lately because I've had it for so long. And I've had to go on a new medication that's not very nice and very new too, which is a bit scary. But that's kind of basically the story of having chronic illnesses. But I worked full time through it all. Kept pushing along.
Throughout the years, how have you managed to, because one of the biggest struggles I think for people with any kind of chronic illness, but especially for illnesses like psoriatic arthritis, which do unfortunately have a, I don't want to say mental health component, but they certainly have a well-being component, if that makes sense. How have you found or how have you adjusted? What tools have worked for you? What mindsets have worked for you in terms of, because you've obviously had to find the capacity to endure and to be resilient when at times you wouldn't have wanted to, but you other option, but that you've got kids and you've got a mortgage to pay and everything else. So what is it that you've found that's worked for you that you could recommend to somebody else who's just starting this battle, knowing that at some point, just like you've experienced, the medication's going to, well, myself currently, I'm on great medication. I'm currently going through the thriving stage. Eventually that thriving will come to an end and I will have to battle what you're battling now. So I'm 40. I'm finally starting to thrive after 10 years of crapulence and misdiagnoses. Great. I'm going to love every minute of it. It will come to an end. When that does, how do you pick yourself up and soldier on?
It's not good advice for people, but I think deny and distract is a bit of a strategy. Look, I keep, it's funny because I think when you've got a chronic pain condition and you've had it for half your life, you kind of get used to it. I think your pain threshold, I think that really
gets distorted, and it does.
It does, yes. It does. And like at the moment, I'm sitting here talking to you, and I've got dactylitis, which is when your hands mm-hmm. swell up, and it's almost unique to mm-hmm. psoriatic arthritis. It's one of the, if you went to the doctor with big fat fingers, that's what they would basically probably prescribe you or mm-hmm. diagnose you, I should say. So while I'm sitting here, I'm actually in a lot of pain at the moment
mm-hmm.
Because wherever I put my hands, it hurts. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I've just kind of, I mean, there's nothing sort of brave about what I've done. I've just mm-hmm. kind of kept myself really busy. Mm-hmm. And I've sort of like, I think nights are the worst,
mm-hmm.
but during the day, I've just kept incredibly busy. And it's amazing because no matter how much pain you're in, if you're connecting with people, you're working, you're doing a job, academia was a good job because mm-hmm. it wasn't a physically demanding job. It's not like mm-hmm. I had to stand up all the time or, mm-hmm. you know, be doing any kind of lifting. It really was all about the mind.
Mm-hmm.
I could sit there and just sort of have a think. And when I couldn't type, what I would do is I would record. You know, if mm-hmm. I was writing a paper or lecture or something, I would actually record it
mm-hmm.
rather than trying to type.
Yes.
But yeah, it's really been a case of just keeping really busy, really enjoying the moments when it's, I'm not sure you call it remission, but those moments like you're having
respite.
At the moment, the respite
moment.
From it. Oh, mm. look, I had a number of really good years,
mm.
really, really good years. And, you know, I took up sport, which was hilarious because
mm.
I played football and people go, you can't do that with psoriatic arthritis.
Mm.
And I was stiff and I was sore and I couldn't run.
And you're like, you know what, it makes me happy and I only live once, so screw it,
yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah, mm. I was probably in the best condition I'd been in like since I was diagnosed. But it was hilarious. I'd just stand in the goal square and the ball would come down and nearly hit me in the head. And
mm.
if I fell over, my teammates would have to pick me up. They'd have to...
Mm.
One would take, you know, two of them would take an arm each and hoist me up. This is, I must say, this is an old woman's competition. I wasn't running around with, you know, 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
This was women over 40.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a quick game. And a lot of 40 women
and fabulous.
Yeah, a lot of women had never played before and it was really just a bit of a kicking gig. Yeah, that's the other thing I do. I took up painting about 6 months
mm-hmm.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
People go, well, how can you paint when you've got arthritis? But what I do is,
mm-hmm.
I actually just pour paint on a canvas and sort of turn it around a few times and let mm-hmm. it marble.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cut a few lines into it and paint the line. And I've got this really effective little colourful thing happening that I just love. I think hobbies are really important. Find something you're passionate about.
Do you find passion? Do you find, because this is my experience, so I've tried many things throughout the years. So for me, the pendulum swings far and wide that my psoriatic arthritis can be up and down, pretty independent on its own, but it is also wholly dependent on my mental health. So it's only ever as good
yes.
as my mental health. And so for me,
yes.
I need to be invested in what I do. I need to really care.
Yep.
It needs to be, as a career, it needs to be enriching. I need to be intellectually
yep.
stimulated because I'm a
yep.
nerd. And then having
no,
hobbies that emotionally enrich me and sustain me. So like you, I do woodworking. Hurts like a banshee, but it brings me so much joy and so much peace
yes.
that I do it anyway. And the benefit that it brings to my mental health and my well-being tends to offset the pain, even though the pain can be
yeah.
excruciating and intense, the ability to endure that and sustain it is significantly more. And similar in the workplace, if I'm doing a job that doesn't hold any intellectual or emotional value to me, I will not last. Like I will get physically very
yeah.
ill very quickly. Whereas if it's something that I really care about and deeply matters
yeah, you can immerse,
to me.
Immerse yourself into it and forget
yep,
your troubles
just,
for a little.
It's amazing. I get this well of reserve and ability to function.
Yeah.
Is it the same for you? Is that what managed?
Yeah.
Because you've had an amazing career and look, I hope I am like you at your age. I genuinely do. I'm in awe and I love what you've done academically and career-wise. I genuinely would give... you know, my left arm and leg to be you when I get older.
Oh, thank
you. Is that something that you think helped?
Oh, yeah, gotcha. I mean, I did, like, I think it's kind of like a balancing act between resting and being active. So when you were talking about your mental state really affects your physical state, which, you know, is probably quite well documented. I find you hurt, so you don't want to do stuff. And if you don't do stuff, you're going to hurt even more, and you're going to be mentally ill. I mean, I think people with this disease, I think if they just sit down and say, it hurts too much to walk, they could potentially put themselves in a wheelchair forever.
Yes.
Because it's one of those diseases where you just have to keep moving. Even when it hurts like hell and you think, I can't stand this, you need
to
get
soldier through.
And so, you know, yeah. And so, look, I was really busy. I mean, as the kids were growing up, I was the preschool president. Back then, like under Jeff Kennett days, that was like running a small, being CEO of a small a small company, because you had to do everything, including pay the teachers and do their super and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Kennett days were very hard and difficult.
They were. He pretty much, like, there was a situation where basically kinder mums were running the whole thing, lock, stock and barrel, which wasn't necessarily a great idea. But and then I was studying as well, and I was working. So I was really, really busy. And being so busy, I got tired. I mean, and I want to just reiterate, not because I'm looking for sympathy, but for the sake of other people, it hurt like bloody hell. I was in pain. You know, like, I'm always in pain. I'm sitting here, my hands are hurting. I know when we finish and I go to get up, it'll be, and it's funny too, because as I get older and people, like, you shouldn't worry about what people think, but as I'm getting up.
But you just do, it's instinct.
I know, as I'm getting up, or if I know, if someone's an acquaintance and I, you know, and they see me strung, I go, oh, I've had this arthritis since I was young. It's not an old person arthritis. Because I probably look like an old not that there's anything wrong with that, but just from a personal thing, I want people to know I've been bloody hurting now for 25 years. So
I got sick at 27, and I thought, and my response was, oh, it's not that bad, you know, compared to my mum's disease of lupus and SLE and everything else. It's fine. I'll get over this. You watch. I'm an old battle axe. And it's horrific.
My rheumatologist told me, and it made me feel a little bit better, that it was the most painful form of arthritis because it manifests itself in so many places. Like, you know, sometimes I can't breathe properly because all the connective tissues in my ribs are inflamed.
Sometimes a lot of issues.
I've just been through a lovely period where I couldn't use knife and fork, so people had to cut my food up for me, and I couldn't do buttons up, so I avoided any clothes with buttons. And, you know, it's the little things. Like last night, I was really, really uncomfortable in bed. And, of course, I've told you about the woes of the elbow. But because my hands are so bad at the moment, my pillow wasn't quite where I wanted it to be.
Yes.
So I got my I went to grab the pillow to pull it into the right spot. And it's like, oh, you know, oh, that hurts. So my pillow is quite heavy. And so as I'm picking it up and moving it, I'm thinking, oh, my God, that hurts. Oh, my hand, oh, my hand, oh, my hand. That's the hand I just showed you.
And are you like me, like fingers. Everything has to be just so. Like the pillow has to be at the right angle and the right depth, and it can't be, the fabric of the what you're sleeping on and what you've got on top of you and the weight. And
the neck and the shoulders,
Yeah, exactly. Everything has to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because if it's a millimeter out of place, you will wake up the next day and you will think that neck and that shoulder is broken.
I think it's a woman thing, the pillows, to begin with. So we've got that going against us. You know, women are always, I can say this because I'm a woman, women are always sort of, you know, you'll see those funny memes going around where there's like six pillows, all of different kinds, all set out differently. It says women. And then there's one sort of old sort of sinking pillow, men, you know, so. But with this disease, honestly, the neck and the shoulders, whenever I've got inflammation in the neck and the shoulders, I just think I can't stand it.
That's my
Achilles heel. It sounds stupid, so I can't stand it. But everything's uncomfortable. Your entire frame is working against you. So it turning is. Over is hard, sitting up is hard. As I said, moving my pillow was hard.
Yep.
Waking myself up with a big psoriasis patch, so it's all kind of... But I think having good sense of humour too.
Yes.
And having... and
you're not living unless, you,
and
unless
not
you're laughing.
Yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And I think the worst thing you can do, which I think a lot of people do when they're in pain, is they isolate.
They do.
You want to... You're in so much pain, you just don't want to, like, face anything.
Yeah. And you get embarrassed as well because you get so self-conscious and I worry that people are going to think that I'm giving them stink eye or something because the pain is obvious on my face and I think, oh, my God, they're going to think I'm angry at them. But in reality, I'm just
sore.
I get so self-conscious and it takes so much effort to be social and your energy is very depleted. So it is incredibly hard to be social when you're in pain, but
well, I used to drink a lot. I had to give up the booze because my mental health said either give up the booze or sending you to rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I drank a lot because that was when I didn't hurt. But the problem was, the next day, seriously, I would be crippled, and it would be so much worse than if you had, you know, if someone without this had a few drinks. But that was sort of almost my lowest point, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it was, the medication wasn't working anymore and I didn't feel like socializing. So I'd have a few drinks before I went out, so I'd be nice and relaxed. And then, of course, that's always a danger because then when you go out, you have a few more drinks and next thing you're sort of rolling about and waking up the next morning feeling like death.
Because the medication triples, you know, if it's 4.2 volume, it's 12.2 the medication's in your system.
Yes. And the bipolar medication too. So I've got this delicate balancing act between the two.
Yes.
And look, I'm not surprised. I think that probably most people with this particular arthritis are people who are very anxious.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I think
having it makes you more anxious. But I think a lot of people, I think if you ask a lot of people who have psoriatic arthritis, they would say that they are anxious people and they get very stressed about things. I'm not suggesting there's no resilience because your resilience is getting out of bed every day with this.
Yeah.
So
you can't not be resilient with this disorder.
No. Well, psoriasis is described as the hurry worry skin condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, most of us have had that before we've actually got the arthritis.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so many people have had psoriasis and then 10 years later they can't walk.
Mm-hmm.
But, look, it's a really, really, I think with all the medication you've got to take that ruins your immune system, you know, like I've just gone on to a new medication, as I was saying before, and the side effects are horrendous. I mean, the biologics we take and inject into ourselves, you know, with stuff to try and eat, you know, try and get rid of some of that inflammation, control it, they worked wonderfully well and then they stopped. Being as effective, and I have terrible flare. But the medication I'm on now, it's new, and the side effects can be quite devastating. I thought the biologics were big, but this particular one, gastrointestinal perforation, shingles, even the, you know, when you crack open, like even if you're having Panadol, you crack it open and you see all these common side effects and all these then rare side effects, and then you know, occasionally it'll say you might have one and anaphylactic shock. But, well, this one, when you look at the common symptoms, they look very much like most medications, severe, or not severe, but, you know, rarer symptoms. And I resisted it for so long, and I tried every biologic on the market, and they just weren't working. And so in the end, as I said, I showed you my hands before.
Yeah.
I normally have quite...
They're double their size.
They are at the moment on my left hand, you know, I've got four fingers that are double their size, and then on my right I've got two. And at the moment my hand's wanting to make four when I relax, when I'm relaxed. But, so I lost the train of thought. What was I saying?
You're saying about the medication.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm sitting here looking and thinking, oh, thank goodness I'm on this, you know. But taking this medication, I was like, it's meant to be very good for dactylitis.
Okay.
I think it's called dactylitis. That's what I've been calling
it.
It
is,
anyway. Yeah. It's meant to be quite effective for that. And the fact that I haven't been able to wear my wedding and engagement rings for months I mean, that's, isn't it funny? It's the little things. That's probably upset me more than, you know, when I can't walk properly.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm fortunate. My husband is so lovely and he looks after me so well, but I know a lot of people don't have that.
No.
I think when you were asking me before how you get through, I think having supportive family around you is really, I mean, I think it must be so hard for people who are alone or they don't have supportive family or their families for whatever reason are not particularly functional. I mean, I've got a husband that just looks after me so well and I've got two fantastic kids. They're really nice people. We're all social justice warriors and I take the kids on protests. We march about this, that and the other. So the kids have been really understanding. I do carry a little bit of guilt because when they were younger and they were going, you know, middle primary school age, that was when I was at my worst. And when we were getting ready for school every morning, if they dropped things on the ground, I couldn't bend over to pick them up. And I would feel this sense of rage, rage that I couldn't, you know, like my daughter's can't find a sock and I find it, it's on the floor and I can't pick it up. So then I get quite, I'd be saying to them, you can't do this, stop leaving things on the floor, I can't pick it up. And I was tired all the time, you know, mum would come home from work and go and put herself to bed for a few hours.
How did you manage that? Because I know that that's something, and I'm hijacking the conversation for a second, I apologise.
No, please do.
How did you manage that? Because I know that that's something for me that I worry about. Like I'm 40, I've chosen not to have kids, and the reason being is that I nursed my mum who was terminally ill, and granted she was terminally ill. She had one of the most severe cluster of illnesses known to man.
Yeah.
Obviously I'm not that sick, but the thought of me having to look my children in the eye and know that my kids see themselves as a carer to me in some way, or do you know that dynamic? Oh, the thought of that just grips my heart in such a way that I haven't got the courage. Does that make sense? Like I admire people who do because
Thank you. And I think I've been a good mum in a lot of ways, very, very supportive. You know, the kids have been able to be who they want to be and, you know, always been, you know, knowing that like my son lives in Brunswick and there's been plenty of trips to Brunswick to, mum, I left something at home. And I go, okay, it's all right. Well, I'll send dad. But, I mean, it's funny because you don't kind of realise the ripple effect because my daughter has decided she's not having children.
Mm-hmm.
Because of me, because she's concerned about bipolar and she's concerned about psoriatic arthritis.
Yeah. Sounds like me. Mm-hmm.
And I'm, and she's not, look, it's not that she's got anything, it's not that she doesn't, you know, love me and I love her and we adore each other and we do lots of things together and, you know, she's a wonderful person and she says, I'm a wonderful mum.
It's because she has love in her heart that she just doesn't want to pass that on. It's an act of love to not pass it on.
Yeah, and so what that means is because of my disease, I'm not going to be a grandmother. You know, like people don't realise that it's not just staggering about. I mean, you're not going to be a mum and I'm not going to be a grandmother. So people just stop and think about that because people don't understand how much this disease can ruin your life.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was at
my rheumatologist says it's the cruelest form of arthritis. Yeah, arthritis.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Well, I was at the chemist picking up yet more medication, and I couldn't open my bag. I couldn't get my purse out. I'd had two cortisone injections into my fingers, and they're painful because they take quite a while to get into your tendons. Like, it's not just a quick jab, it's a long...
And they force themselves in. They're not gentle. Yep. And they hurt the entire time.
Yeah, they do. And the nurse kept saying, let us know if you need a break. And I just wanted the thing to be over. But I was at the chemist and I was having trouble getting my purse out of my bag because my hands are a bit bad at times. And I said to the nice lady at the chemist, I said, look, nice woman at the chemist, I said, I can't get my purse out. Do you think you could help me? And I said, because, you know, unfortunately my arthritis is really affecting my hands at the moment. goes, oh, of course, you know, I know what it's like. I get a little bit of arthritis in a couple of fingers. It's such a nuisance. It's such it's a bit annoying, isn't it? And, you know, normally I don't say anything. The normal me would go, oh, yeah, it's bad, isn't it? But this time, my God, I was not in the mood. And I said to her, there is not one day that I'm not in pain somewhere in my body. There are days when I can't breathe comfortably. I don't sleep comfortably. I can't, as you can see, I can't
It's like every bone in your body is broken and every tendon.
And I said to her, you know, sometimes my neck is out, my spine hurts. I said, right now, you can see I can't open my bag. I can't get my purse out. I can't get my credit card out. I said, I've been like this since I was 30. The flippant, she apologized for being
I think you're acknowledging the severity of it. There can be, because I think that's also a very important thing to do. Sometimes in trying to give hope to people, we undermine or undervalue. But you know what?
That'll inspire people.
But when you're going through it, that is honestly what it feels like. Do you know what I mean? Like, especially if you're first diagnosed.
Day, yeah.
Yeah, or when you're first diagnosed, because it takes so much from you. And I think finding hope is about learning to find what you get in return in spite of what it takes.
You see, I've had a great life. Got heaps of friends, wonderful family, great job. I'm now following up my passion. I've played sport. I think when I said it ruined my life, I think I was looking for a dramatic effect because the chemist had been so flippant. Because, I mean, it hasn't ruined my life. It's made my life harder. It's made everything harder to do. But you can either, like I said before, if you just sit down and don't get up, you'll never get up again.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those arthritic conditions where you've just got to keep... Sorry, I'm still feeling bad. I said it ruined my life.
No, don't feel bad.
It made the chemistry, made that lady, woman feel bad, so that was what I was doing it for. Because I thought she was so flippant about her...
Don't feel bad because I do understand what you mean. And for context for listeners, I often use the because it does. It robs you of so much and it can really feel like it's robbing you of everything because it can really take your joy. But what it does is, and this is true of any illness, and I think that this sounds awful, but I think that because I've experienced a lot with friends and family who have had cancer and things like that, they tend to be the other people who understand this, that it can really take from you almost all your joy, but on the flip side, it then enriches when you learn to soldier through, because your body adjusts. Even though it takes everything from you, you suddenly realize, oh my God, my body is amazing. And you wake up one day and you go, how the heck is this possible? How the heck did my body learn to, when? I didn't even try. When did my body learn to adjust and adapt to this? How is this functionally possible? Oh, my God, my body is superhuman.
I walk 5K a day.
Somewhere along the line, And then somewhere along the line, other things get really enriching. You learn to be deeply enriched by the simple things in life. So even though this disease for me has taken so much, what I find is that I am more powerfully happy and joyful and enriched by simple things than many of my friends who don't have a tenth of the complexities in their life that I do. And that's the flip side of it.
I think what I meant was it's ruined my body.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like my life.
It can ruin your body, but it doesn't take your soul. In fact, it tends to enrich that part of you.
Well, I walk 5Ks a day, and I've got friends who are able-bodied who don't do that. And then I've got people going, well, you can't be that bad if you can do that.
Which is so ridiculous, and you're like, honey, I do that in spite of it. I hate when people say that.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I just put the walking shoes on and I walk.
Yep.
And when I get home, I sit on the couch, and then the first time I get up, I think, oh, and I'm so stiff because my body is not. But it keeps me mentally. It keeps me.
Yep.
Feeling, you know, like alive and it just, I went through a stage where I had a big flare and I stopped walking for a while.
Yep.
Biggest mistake. I ended up so glum. And it didn't help. I mean, it actually made my flare worse because I wasn't doing anything. But like I said, people go, oh, it can't be so bad. You walk and you work and you have fun and you've got lots of friends. I think, yeah, because that's what I choose.
Exactly.
I mean, I love getting together. I'm sitting here feeling a real burst of happiness.
Yes.
Because I'm in my van. I'm down by the beach.
Exactly.
With family. I'll go for a walk later.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, with this particular disease, you always hurt. Unless you're in completely, unless you go into some sort of remission, which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Respite, I think, is probably a better word for it.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's been times when I've had like a couple of years of feeling fine.
Yeah. And they're wonderful.
You know,
and don't you learn to be so grateful for them? Like, I don't know about you, but my moments of just when I'm not hurting, or I have a little ritual every morning, like I get up and I have my cup of coffee and I have my Nespresso coffee. It's good coffee with my Nespresso machine and I have my bougie little cups. And I just focus on, like, it sounds corny, but I'm never not organically grateful. I'm always catapulted into gratitude because I'm sitting there thinking, my God, how effing lucky am I? Here I am in Australia drinking an espresso coffee out of a $15 mug. Now, I chose to invest in a $15 mug because I knew it would trigger this gratitude episode. And I was able to buy that thing. You know, someone gave me money, actually. That was a bit of a present for Christmas. But I bought those cups and everything on a disability pension. I'm in Australia. I live a good life. I live on my own. I've got a very nice house. I've got a bougie bed because, you know, comfort's everything to me. You know, and I lay in my organic cotton fancy bed sheet and blah, 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 blah. Now, all of that I get because it functionally makes my life enriching and better and healthier and constructive for my well-being and my health. But it makes me incredibly grateful because I sit there and I just think, and then when I have my good days, I'm just like, my God, how bleeding lucky am I? And I enjoy the simple act of the fact that I'm still alive, the fact that I have sun on my face, the fact that I can feel the wind in my hair, the fact that I can enjoy a damn nice coffee. I love coffee shops and dancing. The fact that I can have a very nice cup of tea or listen to a nice piece of music or snuggle with my cat. The most trivial things in my life become these big things that just make me serenely happy and peaceful.
Oh, well, I sort of made my peace with this disease years ago. I thought, well, it is what it is, and I have periods where it's good. At the moment, I'm ruined my life. At the moment, I'm just feeling a bit glum too.
Don't worry.
I'm just a bit glum. Like I said, I just wanted the woman behind the desk. I just wanted her to not be so flippant.
Flippant,
and
yeah.
She's got arthritis in a couple of fingers.
Like, yeah.
And I was like, so ruined my life. But anyway.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm having a really, I mean, look, I love to study.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had that intellectual curiosity. Now I've got this. I managed to do a degree and honours, a master's and a PhD. And now I'm doing another master's. If anyone out there wants to.
I love that for you. How did you get through those? Because they're tiring and exhausting.
Oh, yeah. And with the PhD, I was working full time as well. So that
how did you manage all that?
Hard. Well, it took me years. It took me about...
Did you do it part-time?
To get my PhD.
Did you do it part-time and did you find that the... how was the university like? Did you find that by having, you know, conversations and communication with them about student support services and, you know, good communication with your teachers and lecturers, what was the practicality of things like?
Well, I was the lecturer
Oh, good
at that
point. Yes.
Because I had, because I had a master's and that sort of got me the job. Because that was back in the days when a master's was good enough. But then it became very clear that you wanted an academic career. If you didn't have a PhD, you might as well pack up your desk and say it's been lovely. It's been lovely knowing you all. So I was under a lot of pressure, a lot of pressure to get that PhD. Now, if you were enrolled in a PhD, that was okay. You know, and, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, that's a qualification that you require. Well, you know, like you don't want a brain surgeon operating on you if they're not qualified. I know that lecturing and media and communications isn't quite the same. But it's kind of got that, you know, you've got to have a certain level of qualification. And I can't believe just compared lecturing and media. So I think I put myself under a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. In the end, I actually told a little fib, and that got me through because mm-hmm. I was taking me forever and I didn't seem to be able to, you know, I'd write. I mean, I had ADHD. That didn't help. But no. I'd be writing away and I'd sort of run away from it. I ran away from it all the time. I'd say, mm-hmm. right, I'm having a day of working on my PhD, and then 5 minutes later I'm finding housework to do, and like, I'd go to work the next day, and I go, oh, yes, I was so productive. And I think, it was really, really hard. But I actually, whenever anybody asks, don't ever ask someone doing a PhD, when are you going to be finished? If you say that to a PhD student, they will fall onto their knees and cry because all you want is for it to stop. It's torture.
Yes.
And whenever anybody asks me, they got the great sob story, I'm working and I'm not well, you know, and I'm trying my best. And I became friends with a woman online, and we decided that we would meet up. She lived in a different state. And so anyway, I went to visit her, and it was really exciting because we've been good friends for quite some time. And I can't believe I did this. I had a few bollies, I'm not mm-hmm. going to lie. And she asked me about the PhD situation. And, you know, after telling all the sob story for so long, I just went, oh, she said, oh, you got a PhD? I went, yeah. And then changed the subject. And then the next day, with my husband the next day, I woke up in the hotel room and I did the Home Alone thing, you know, with my hand on each cheek, and I thought, what did I do? Mm. And when I got home, and because it just sounds like you're a nutbag, you know, I've got a PhD when you haven't. And when I got home, my son said, you're a Google search away from being caught, Mum. And of course, anyway, I kid you not, 3 months later I had a PhD. I was miles and miles and miles behind. I was almost like, mm-hmm. I'd taken a year off as well, and I was about to lapse. It was about to be all over Red Rover, and I'd just about given mm-hmm. up. Telling a little fib, three months later got it.
Yep, the catapult that was enough to
worry about what people see. Sometimes it pays off to worry about what other people think.
I love it.
So
just
if you want
the
to
thing
do a
I would do, I have to admit, that fits with my personality.
Yeah, I just couldn't do the, no, but I've been working so hard, and I work full time, and I've got a family, and it's hard, and I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
I really was a long way off finishing.
Yeah.
So anyone
you
out there
just needed
doing
the conversation
a PhD,
to not happen.
Yes. Anyone out there doing a PhD, I swear to God, you'll get it done in 3 months if you've got the motivation. And the thing is, it was so easy in the end. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think when you're doing that level
isn't
of study,
that always the way?
You say, oh, it's hard, it's so hard, and you sort of dick about, and you never, you know, and you sort of keep, I'm going to do a bit of writing, but I'll do a bit of reading first, and next mm-hmm. thing all you're doing is reading, mm-hmm. and reading and reading and reading more. But once you get it in, you look back and you think, you know, I made a big fuss about that, and it actually wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
If I'd just not kept sort of doing everything but writing it, I would have had it done years ago.
Yep.
So, and every PhD student says that.
Yep.
We've all got a bit of PTSD afterwards.
I was about to say
PhD.
Would you? It's all good and well to say that, but would you really want to do another one?
Well, the hilarious thing about the big fib, was the day I graduated, I couldn't afford to have photos of congratulations on my Facebook page. So my daughter had just completed her diploma of film and television, and she was going on to do the graduate diploma. She could have a graduation ceremony with the mm-hmm. diploma. And I said, guess what, love? You're graduating with me because I've got to have a reason. So I've got my arm around my daughter who's wearing her diploma gown, and she's just rolling her eyes and going, so excited to be part of the ceremony. My daughter's graduating. Isn't it great? And then I had my Facebook, you know, no tags allowed. And I was on Facebook watch for the next 48 hours, you know, and a couple of friends, you know, delete, 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 hide, hide, hide. It truly was the lie of the century, the things I had to do to get. Please don't anyone out there think I'm a liar. This is like
It was a once-off, obviously, because otherwise you would have done a better job of lying.
The effort to just make the lie stop and then make the lie have never happened. It was really like you could make a film out of it. I've said this. Oh my God, what have I done? And then from that moment on, it was hilarious. But thrown my academic career. I had tenure, for God's sake, and I threw it in. There are days when I wake up and I think, what were you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm loving the social work course. I was working with family domestic violence my first placement, and my mm-hmm. next one is I'm working with elderly, mentally ill people who've got comorbidity. And we're not just talking dementia, we're talking like mentally unwell. Yeah, as I said, people go, oh, dementia. I go, no, these people have bipolar, they have schizophrenia, they have depression. And they've had it when they were younger. Just because they've got older doesn't mean it mysteriously disappears. Oh, look, I think life is what, I reckon I do more than a lot of my friends who don't have any illness.
Yes.
Mm. I reckon I do heaps more. I mean, I've traveled and I've had a good career and I've raised a family and I'm working towards doing something I always wanted to do. I paint, I go to the footy every week. I barrack to Collingwood. We've got, my children are fifth generation Collingwood supporters.
Mm-hmm.
It's something our family do. It is very much like religion. It is.
Yeah.
You start taking them at four and they don't know any different. And so I've had this really good life. I really have, when I stop and think about it, it's been good talking to you because I actually have had a very fulfilling, very good life. It's just every now and again I'll stand up or go to pick something up or go to bend down and think, oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
I do have to say that for those who are new to this disease,
mm-hmm.
When I first got it, I was lying in bed a lot.
Yes.
Like that's where
so
you
was
find
I.
me. Because I was so sore and I was so...
And that was, were you given the recommendation to go to, like I was actually told, go to bed and get as much rest because that's what your body needs. Your body needs to just sleep and recover.
Because
it took a good couple of years for, I mean, I was diagnosed in 2007? And it really wasn't until 2013-ish that the medical community sort of caught up and went, oh no, you've got to move, get more sleep than the recommended eight, but move.
Well I was in bed all the time because I hurt, and it's funny because I look back and being in bed all the time was part of the reason why I always hurt, and I felt lazy. Like when you go off to bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you look around, you think, none of my friends have to do this, am I just lazy? But anyway,
it screws with my head. I hate it when I have to do that.
I'm of the generation where, what will other people think? I've just got a disabled car parking permit, and I'm worried if I don't look too disabled, people will go.
Oh, I have the same issue.
And
I always apologise whenever I get out of my car because I've got a permit. I apologise every time, I can't help it.
I've ordered the psoriatic arthritis awareness sticker to put on my car. That's how far.
Maybe that's what I should do.
We're orange and lavender, for anyone who was curious to know. That's our ribbon.
Is it?
I'm
going to have to look it up.
It's a nice orange. It's pale orange and a pale lavender. It doesn't sound
hideous.
But, so when I was lying in bed, and I don't want anyone to snigger, but my husband and I had a water bed. It was a leftover from his bachelor days.
And that would have been horrible for you.
Yeah, and we were quite poor. We were living in a very humble home, and we really couldn't afford another bed. But that was back in the days when those sort of things were actually very expensive. They're so cheap now. And we all know,
they were thousands of dollars.
Yeah, if you wanted a decent bed, it was at least $1,500. And we just didn't have it. So anyway, we're sleeping on this stupid water bed, which was the worst thing for someone with arthritis. Because I couldn't get in it and I couldn't get out of
it. You couldn't turn over, you couldn't anything.
No. And can I say that was daggy even when I was younger to have water bed. I don't know what my husband was thinking when he was living as a bachelor with a water bed. I'm not sure. He lived with two other bachelors and they all had a water bed. It was hilarious.
I think he probably watched a little bit of too much of...
Yeah.
What's that? There's a movie out that's...
I think they thought it might be a chick magnet, but actually
exactly.
it's a bit of a chick repellent.
Yeah,
but anyway,
exactly.
So I'm trying to get in and out of this bloody waterbed, and I'm just, it was actually a little bit comfortable, you know, just floating on water.
Oh, they're wonderfully comfortable as long as you're not in agonising pain.
Yeah, and I couldn't get out, so I stayed in. Anyway, my mum came marching up. She and my husband were basically nursing me while, you know, in those first, we don't know what's wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, get out of bed, we're going for a walk. And I said, I'm in too much pain. I cannot possibly get out of bed. Anyway, so she and my husband hoisted me out of bed, and she made me walk down the street where I live. She made me walk 100 metres.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 200 metres there and back. And then we just kept increasing the the distance till I could walk to the end of the street and back. And I honestly think if she hadn't intervened, I would be in a wheelchair today, and I would be very, very disabled.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it hurts, but, you know, it hurts. But put your shoes on and get out walking, because if you keep moving, it's a whole body stiffness thing if you're having a bad flare.
Yep.
If you move, you'll feel better.
Yep.
You really will. You'll come home from your walk, you'll sit down, you'll go to get up, you think, oh, my God, what have I done? But then once you get moving again, I credit some of the periods of not being stiff with my walking.
Yep. I had a similar experience, actually, when I first got sick. Some friends of mine, they had a daughter that was dying of cancer. She'd gotten cancer when she was 4, and she was now 8, and it had metastasized.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was very close friends with them, and, you know, I looked out for them and they looked out for me, and they used to come, or my friend's husband, he would come every morning, and because I lived in a two-story house and I had to wait to get out of the lease, he'd come and pick me up out of my bed and carry me down the stairs.
Yeah.
And then, because I could not do those stairs, I could not do them.
Yeah, I totally get where you're coming from there.
Yeah. And then he'd walk with me just to get me walking and then get me situated so that I could, you know, be about the house. And then I'd go back and spend the rest of the day with them often and just help them, you know, do what,
that,
you know, they had to do.
Yeah, take your mind off and perspective. I mean, that's the thing. This is a crappy disease to have.
It is.
And you hurt. It, look, to be perfectly honest, the older you get, I had a really, like when I was your age, I had a really good period where medication was working. You know, I was really active. I thought, oh, good, you know, I don't have to worry about this anymore. But, of course, a year or two later, the body says, okay, well, your immune system says, well, you know, I've worked out this particular chemical that you've put into me, and I can take off again. And then, you know, like there isn't one person who's a bit older with psoriatic arthritis that hasn't been through methotrexate, ARAVA, I think it is, make your hair fall out, and prednisolone on and off, and then the biologics, the Humira. The touts, you know, the works, and now, of course, the newer ones, which are scary, but they might turn out to be just fine. So, yeah, I mean, the reality is that you're hurt. Like, you're hurt, but you do get used to the pain. I'm sitting here, and if I started to think about my body right now, I've got three areas that are stiff and sore. But I'll go for a walk along the beach.
Yep.
And some of that stiffness will, you know, will start to subside a bit.
And I have to say, though, as well, you know, just for people listening, it is also worth, because everybody's different, and I know, like, and I have to say, I am very aware of my luck/privilege in this regard. So I've been on methotrexate, and I tried Plaquenil, and I've been on prednisone.
Yep.
The Plaquenil nearly killed me, but the methotrexate, I've no side effects whatsoever, and I'm doing extremely well on that.
No, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, brilliant on that, and I've been on that now for 5 years, and I'm still okay, and I'm on some Salazapyrin, and I'm okay. I was on some Humira, and I was thriving on the, doing okay, I should say, on the Humira. And then
I was on that for years. It worked for years for me.
Yeah, I was on that. A chemist stuffed up my dosage, and as soon as they did that, and my doctor tried to get me back on it, my body had adjusted, and it just didn't work the same.
Yeah.
Then she tried me on something else, it didn't work, and something else didn't work. In between all that, the new one came out, the new Tremfya come out.
Yep.
That one, for me, I feel 25 on Tremfya.
Yep.
And that one.
Oh, look, the medic, yeah.
So, touch wood, God willing, all that stuff. Medication is advancing so rapidly and so quickly. And this is more of a privilege from my age because I'm 40. So I'm,
yeah.
You know, the younger generations have this privilege is that medication is advancing so quickly. You know, I say I will be healthier at 65 than I was at 35 because of medication advancements.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I do an anti-inflammatory diet.
Mm-hmm.
I eat clean.
Mm-hmm.
So I've eliminated sugar. And I don't drink alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much, yeah, if you look at my little platter of food, I never go hungry.
Mm.
But it's, and I feel so much, I went on an anti-inflammatory diet because with these hands, I was in despair.
Mm.
And I've lost 12 kilos.
Yeah.
And I have not even tried, I have not denied myself food. I have not exercised more than usual.
Yep.
I just went anti-inflammatory and I think cutting the sugar out. I mean, anybody who has psoriatic arthritis, stop eating sugar. That is a couple of pieces of dark, you know, 80% is fine, but don't eat sugar because it's like, it's poison.
It is absolutely poison.
I'm not just trying to be one of those, you know, guru kind of like should be eating mung beans.
Sugar and carbohydrates, I've noticed, like really refined carbohydrates. You have them in, you know, and you'll know about it pretty quickly.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And so, and look, but yeah, look, I know people with this that have been on methotrexate and they're older than me and they've had it since they were younger than me and they've never needed anything else.
Yeah.
Ever. But it's like anything, there are degrees. Some people have a stiff hand and take methotrexate and be 100% fine. Other people will have it from head to toe and
This is also why it's so important that people need to keep moving and to watch what you eat because and it sounds corny and everybody says it but and this is backed up by science that the microbiome especially like that our gut is so heavily linked to psoriatic arthritis. I'm hopeful of getting a fecal transplant, which is a whole other
I know what that is because that's the thing. My cousin works on that in America for one of the big pharma companies in Washington, and she's always telling me to do that. But and it's had great results. But
it has, and I'm just like I'm squirreling money away because it's not covered by Medicare. But I'm just like the results on this thing are amazing.
I know I should try that, but I mean, you know, like on a scale of 1 to 10. My rheumatologist has told me that a lot of people with psoriatic arthritis, they're a 1, they're 2, they're a 3. I'm a 10. It's funny because I just don't let it stop me. I mean, I'm just trying to think of things that I haven't done because of it. Yeah, so I had a great life. I mean, my life is full of laughter. My family have the best sense of humor. We've even laughed at my limitations at times. And,
oh, you've got to laugh at yourself.
The irony in things. And, I mean, it hasn't stopped me doing anything.
No.
Like I said, I've travelled, I've studied, I've travelled, I've worked, I've been a parent, I've been on lots of committees, I've been a member of the Labor Party. I actually ran for federal parliament as the Labor candidate back in the 2013 election.
Wow.
That might have been a bipolar thing, though, I have to say.
Love that.
Thank
you so much. You've been listening to Kathy Farrell on the Theories of Hope podcast. Kathy is a professor of communications and media and is currently finishing her master's in social work. Kathy is a bipolar, ADHD and psoriatic arthritis warrior. I'm your host, Beck Howlett, and we look forward to speaking to you again next week.